Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, June the 18th, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is Jan Bowman. Today's session number is 2001-1, and it's entitled Cries of the Spirit. Let's listen in.
Now that I've called Cries of the Spirit, this will introduce a week of talking about healing of body, mind, and spirit, and the role that Christian meditation might play in that healing. I'm going to begin by reading a portion of Psalm 88. Lord, I call for help all day. I weep all through the night. May my prayer reach you. Hear my cry for help. My heart is deeply troubled, my life on the brink of Sheol. I am counted among those who will go down into the pit. I have no strength left. I am alone, as good as dead, like one of the slaughtered lying in the grave, like one who has been forgotten, deprived of your protecting hand. You have driven me to the bottom of the pit, to its darkest, deepest place. I am weighted down by your anger, drowned under your waves. And just a line from Psalm 46, be still and know that I am God. I think between the two of those passages, we have the whole swing of the Psalms in terms of cries of the Spirit, the cry of the Spirit that reaches such proportions, the place that we can come to in our lives where there is no possible means of putting into words the kinds of emotions or experiences we are having. And perhaps it's at that point that we learn to be still and know that God is God. I am going to assume that we are all in the process of seeking healing. And I need to do that because otherwise this could become a session for the wounded, you know. And in my estimation, everyone is wounded. And I think that those who are Christian have a particular awareness of how we are wounded, excuse me, and in what ways we might need to be healed. So for the first few minutes of this session, I would like us to get into some small groups, groups of no more than four, please, and talk about these first four questions on the board. Now, I'm not going to ask for all of the groups to discuss all of the questions. That wouldn't be possible in, say, 5 to 8 minutes. But perhaps you can address each one at least a bit, and then focus on the one of your choosing. So would you do that now, please? Try to get together with people that are new to you. Please determine right away who is willing from your group to respond for the group.
Because they have the 2 o'clock
and that seems okay.
Maybe you tell Melissa what you
do.
I'm not sure. we make it as it when we stand with the other person.
All right, I need to interrupt you in order to do a small group check. Are you right in the middle of something, or would 2 more minutes be sufficient?
Two more minutes.
I know, that's the ice cream group. And
absolutely. You brought my banana split. You said
it. There are only 2 more.
We have 2 minutes.
Let's come back together at this point and remember that each group should have appointed or asked someone to be the respondent for the group. However, we can take all responses. So, let's get back into the circle so that we can all face forward here.
Thank you.
who just came in, I'll repeat that this session is going to be on cries of the Spirit, and we will work our way through the week into the subject of healing and meditation, the Christian practice of meditation. So today is introductory. What did you have to say in response to the first question? What is healing? Now, the groups don't have numbers, so I'll just ask for volunteers. Who would like to respond to that from your group?
Well, our group kind of described it as being made whole again.
Mm-hmm.
That was our kind of our key idea with respect to that.
All right, that's a good beginning. Being made whole again. Yes.
A balance in the energies.
A balance in the energies. When you say energies, can you describe what you're talking about?
I think, please understand, I could be 100% wrong. I think for me, it's like everything is energy,
mm-hmm.
and there's frequencies. So like a microwave has one frequency, and TV has a different frequency, and radios have different frequencies. And so our thoughts have connect up with certain frequencies. And so if we have good thoughts, that's a higher energy place than if we have negative thoughts, which is a lower energy place.
Okay.
And
all right, that helps. Thank you very much. Yes.
We thought it would maybe be finding an equilibrium. It may not be the old one, but finding some equilibrium that
mm-hmm.
allows you to go forward again.
All right, equilibrium. Any other responses? Yes.
Well, we talked about healing as really there being a willingness to change, and a sense of how Jesus said, "Thy will be done."
Mm-hmm.
Usually, we want to get in there and plow through and do it our way.
Mm-hmm.
But resigning your human will to God's will, trying to align yourself with that,
mm-hmm.
kind of opens the door to healing.
All right. So, could you say, in other words, that sometimes we want to have too much control?
Exactly.
Over? Oh.
But guess who's it really is in control?
All right. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
We thought it was accepting and having pain,
mm-hmm.
and but really the word accepting we thought was a good word.
All right. Any other responses to that first question?
I think that healing is a change from an unhappy state to a more happier state.
All right. That's an interesting comment, because that happiness may or may not depend upon whether one is actually well or not. Do you understand what
yeah.
I mean? Healthy, etc. Okay. Yes.
We had a phrase in our group, a calm in the storm, that whether you're feeling happy or feeling unhappy, like there's
mm-hmm.
a place of centering that you can deal stuff. And some of my own work is, I guess I see healing synonymous with sort of a movement from denial to an awareness of something, kind of going along with a willingness or an acceptance
mm-hmm.
of the change that's taking place in a person's experience.
Good. Yes.
The thought of seeing just the simple act of turning around, changing.
Turning around, and being willing to do that,
right.
Yes. Which implies letting go, maybe, of a former way, former set of habits. Okay, wonderful. Well, I think we could collectively write the next book on healing, don't you? Watch out, Andrew Weil. I am going to offer you a couple of quotations in response to this question from some people that I have been associated with or have been reading. And the first is Stephen Levine, who is an oncologist. You may have heard about his books. One is called Who Dies? This one is called Healing into Life and Death. And Stephen says, healing is the growth that each person seeks. Healing is what happens when we come to our edge, to the unexpected unexplored territory of mind and body and take a single step beyond into the unknown, the space in which all growth occurs. Healing is discovery. It goes beyond life and death. Now, I'd like to hear your reaction to this, because we said some rather similar things, but I don't think any group actually hit upon this particular definition. Is there anything in his quotation here that strikes you as being interesting or exceptional or different?
Would you read it again?
I certainly would. Healing is the growth that each person seeks. Healing is what happens when we come to our edge, to the unexplored territory of mind and body, and take a single step beyond into the unknown, the space in which all growth occurs. Healing is discovery. It goes beyond life and death.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, you know, the way you were reading it, that it was like a picture, and it's like, mm-hmm. Life and death is life. It's just that one, our body dies, but our soul and spirit never do. So the place beyond that would be where they all connect.
Mm-hmm. So it's a part of the same fabric. Okay. Anyone else have a response to this?
That sort of suggests that in order to heal, the precedent to that is there is some change that has occurred that you can never go back to the way things were.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you have to go forward to some new place.
All right.
In order to heal.
So if you don't take that step into the unknown, you're really going to be stuck in whatever we might call that state, whether it's stasis or illness or something else. Unwholeness. Come on over here.
I was just going to say, he said mind and body, but he never said spirit.
No.
So he doesn't think you can heal spiritually, just only in your mind and your body?
He has a very interesting response to that question. And I prefer to read it to you, okay? He says he's not comfortable with this term spiritual healing. I do not believe that the spirit can be injured. It is the uninjured, the uninjurable, the boundarylessness, of being, the deathless. That's the spirit. The spirit is deathless. In other words, it's immortal. So what is offered here is not a spiritual healing, but rather a healing into the spirit. Now you could call that a question of semantics, or just, I don't know if you, yes.
Well, I love that. That really clarifies, because when he says it's discovery, I was thinking after everybody, so it, I was thinking the word revelation. It's really a discovery of what God made us to be spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we glimpse that, you know, that changes us, mm-hmm. whether physically or whatever way,
mm-hmm.
mentally, emotionally, whatever needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it raises us up to a higher level of understanding or consciousness or awareness, whatever you want to call it. But
mm-hmm.
it's discovering something that's already there,
mm-hmm.
that God has, this spirit, like he said, this unbounding, indistinguishable spirit, or whatever
mm-hmm.
you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, thank you for that.
Well,
yes.
If we wanted to get biblical, we could call it the image of God.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Children have it all over us then, don't they, in healing?
Mm-hmm.
Because
why
they're willing to take that extra step.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes. All right, well, I need to tell you, perhaps, if you don't know, that Stephen Levine is an oncologist, and he worked at a center for healing, and he and his wife. And in the process of talking with many cancer patients, they discovered that many of them were blaming themselves for not getting better, mm-hmm. for not being cured. And it was this very act of feeling that they were responsible for not only the illness, perhaps, but for the fact that they couldn't get better. People telling them stories of, you know, well, my great uncle so-and-so, he had stage 4 prostate cancer, and my word, he came back, you know. This actually, as you might imagine, leads to more problems, and the illness can proceed even more quickly if you're into a cycle of self-blame. So he has written these books, I believe, to redefine healing, although there are many in this room who already know that, that sometimes healing simply doesn't mean, in fact, quite often, it doesn't mean for cancer patients, for example, or anyone else, that you're going to emerge from this to live another 50 years, right? What does it mean? What does healing mean in that sense? How do you suppose he is defining healing or helping those patients to define
acceptance?
Acceptance.
Live to the fullest.
Live to the fullest while you have a chance. Good.
Yeah.
What else? Yes.
I was going to say, Marnie Siegel also addressed it in that
yes.
correct way.
Right. Many of the people he has worked with have come to find that this is their opportunity for healing, that cancer has given them the chance to recognize that they have buried resentments, grudges, unfinished business, lots of forgiveness, lots of acceptance of forgiveness needs to go on. And when that happens, there's a radiance that fills these people, and they are healed. And they may die a week later, but it is almost at that point, beside the point. You know, it simply doesn't matter that much. I think that we're all influenced by cultural messages about healing, right, and good health. It definitely affected me when I became very ill about 8 years ago. And I have to admit that I got into that cycle of feeling guilty, you know, because, hey, lighten up. You know, the glass is half full, Jan, all this stuff, you know, just fix it now, because that's what we do in our society.
Would the opposite then follow? If you did not do that, would it be more horrific?
Mm. Say more about that.
I'm thinking of Eric West's friend who is now dying of brain cancer,
mm-hmm.
and it's horrific. Her life is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing has been resolved. If anything, it's become worse.
Mm-hmm.
The family is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And her death is horrible. It's just a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was diagnosed a year ago, it seemed like there might be an opportunity
mm-hmm.
for these things to fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
Okay.
And
well, that's certainly central to this whole question. I would like to believe that it's never too late. In fact, he's working with some patients who are within days of their dying, who are in as bad shape as this person you're describing. So it may be difficult to imagine. I'd like to believe it's possible. Let me quote from another doctor. This one is Balfour Mount, who's the director of palliative care at Royal Victoria Hospital in Montreal. This man, I have to tell you, is important to me because when I first began to meditate, I was having trouble doing so because of the pain I was in. The pain was highly distracting. And a friend told me to write to him, and he wrote back, not just once, but twice, in very personal and consoling ways. Balfour Mount says, "The classical distinctions of body, mind, and spirit are interdependent, intimately interwoven. Healing involves movement toward integration, integrity, and wholeness. Now this actually mirrors what many of you said, I think. I heard you talking and you said these things. It may or may not involve return to physical health. It is possible to die healed. It occurs in the present tense and involves opening, slowly centering, trusting, accepting, and letting go. I heard all of those things here, I think. So, did you talk at all about what blocks healing? Did you get to that question? Mm-hmm. All right, let's hear a few responses there, please.
Mm-hmm. Anger, blame, not taking personal responsibility for one's choices and processes.
Okay, good start. Any other responses? Yes.
Apathy, settling for being less than well, mm-hmm. getting used to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, cultural things that we may or may not realize are playing a role in the speeded up stress that we experience, and looking around and comparing ourselves with other people who seem to be, to us, to be doing everything better or faster or achieving and having awards or medals or degrees to show
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, it's very possible to be really, again, down on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this movement that you need from feeling better,
mm-hmm.
From feeling not good to feeling better.
How can that be supported in such a competitive mm-hmm. culture? Yes.
Denial.
Mm-hmm. Yes, denial plays a very big part, doesn't it?
We talked about the fear of the process,
mm-hmm.
that the pain that comes sometimes through the healing, that we're afraid to face that, and we're
mm-hmm.
also afraid for the change of who will be at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That stops you from going through the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fear is a very great enemy of healing, in my estimation.
We also talked about stubbornness and this sense of, you know, the opposite of thy will be done is my will be done. I've got to do it my way.
That's right.
But also that sense of wanting to stick with the status quo because it's safe and secure, and you don't have to, as the quote said, you know, step into the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing things the way you've always done them, you're not thinking, you're not praying, you're not expanding your vision or anything. You're afraid under a little shell somewhere, and that mm-hmm. you know, keeps you from taking that step.
Exactly. Sometimes just one thing can go wrong. Have you ever noticed this? Just one thing. And the shocks, the reverberations from that can get us off of our, what we know is our center, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how we keep that equilibrium. Okay, I'd like to quote Stephen Levine again upon this question. He says, healing is not forcing the sun to shine, but letting go of the personal separatism, the self-images. That's indirect, a direct echo of what Karen said. The resistance to change, denial, for example. The fear and anger, the confusion that forms the opaque armoring around the heart. The heart. Isn't that interesting? This is a physician referring to the heart as the seat of all that is physical, that has to do with physical health, body, mind, and spirit. So, where is healing to be found? Did any of you get to this question? It's a little odd way of putting it. I could have said, for example, what promotes healing, but I'd like you to think about it maybe from another angle. Where is healing to be found?
In ourselves.
Okay, within ourselves. We know ourselves the best. We know what needs to be healed, etc.
I'm not sure I agree with that totally. I mean, I think some healing goes on because we surround ourselves with friends and you know, we are in society mm-hmm. with someone.
Okay. So healing, you believe, can't be accomplished by oneself.
No, it may mm-hmm. be different for different people. Some people may want to go off and meditate. That's their way of healing. Some mm-hmm. people may need to have people around mm-hmm. in order to heal.
Right.
So it's different for different people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that I understand what you're saying, and I think that it is absolutely necessary to have others around us, but no one else can do it for us, ever. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how many people are around willing, if you yourself aren't able to allow that to come in.
Oh, you're speaking of opening up to this possibility, right?
Mm-hmm. If we are closed up, mm-hmm. if our mind is closed and our heart is closed, mm-hmm. it does not matter how many people want to fill us. Mm-hmm. If we have empty places that we put lids on, it doesn't matter how many people put stuff in or try to, it will come back out without ever reaching. We're the only ones who can fill our emptiness. We're the only ones who can fill our pain. And it does not matter how many people are around us. If we're not open, it's not going to happen. And we can have nobody around us and still fill ourselves and still heal ourselves.
Okay. Yes.
You know, I think there are lots of facets, like a diamond, there are lots of facets to that. And I hear all these different things, and I think... I hear what you're saying, and I really respect that, because I think... if we're consciously working on that, I agree with you, but I've heard too many examples where some moms, you know, some kid has gone off and is totally off the deep end, and she's praying, the church is praying, or whatever, and that kid does not want to be healed. He's trying to do the opposite, and yet this sense of community is bringing about a healing. And somebody in our little discussion said, where is healing to be found? Everywhere. You know, it takes a receptive thought, and it may be the receptive thought of the people praying for someone, or it may be that person searching for it, but, I mean, I thought of the example of when a speaker I heard one time said, when Stephen was stoned, there's no mention in the Bible of the community of believers, or the church, whatever you want to call it, you know, got together to be supportive of that. When Paul was stoned, the church, the community, gathered around and prayed, and he was resuscitated. He came back and went on his preaching mission, and the speaker pointed out that community of believers was a very, very powerful healing force, and sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need to, Jesus said, go in your closet and pray. Sometimes we need to be all by ourselves out in the wilderness or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And it's just, if you try and make it a formula, you have made it into a status quo, and then that blocks it. You mm-hmm. have to be led by the Spirit mm-hmm. in every situation. I think that's what you mean.
I'd like to move on to the next part of this session now, and that is to look at some cries of the Spirit in poetry, and then to attempt to voice our own need for healing by using some lines from poetry. They're written on the board here. And this is something that you should have absolutely no fear about. I don't want anyone to feel afraid or intimidation, because we may or may not have time to share it. I think it's quite possible that we won't. And I want it to be a private sort of thing, if that's the way you would like it to be. But let's start first by looking at those who have used cries of celebration and integration in poetry. And among these, I have found in a book called Cries of the Spirit, edited by Marilyn Sewell, a vast wealth of poetry that covers many kinds of cries of the Spirit. And Marilyn Sewell asserts in her introduction that women's contemporary poetry, and really also poetry from the past, shows us that in our culture we've gone astray spiritually. And this poetry attempts to redefine what is sacred and call us back home. Part of the problem, I think, for many people in contemporary society is that we have inherited that split between mind and body out of a kind of Greek dualistic thinking, and we're still in the process of trying to reintegrate that. It's almost surprising, if not shocking, to find that even in the 13th century, Julian of Norwich, an anchoress in England, could write this kind of poetry. I understood that our sensuality is grounded in nature, in compassion and in grace. This enables us to receive gifts that lead to everlasting life. For I saw that in our sensuality God is, for God is never out of the soul. This is the woman who could describe Jesus as our mother, who feeds us as a mother feeds her babe. I've used Julian of Norwich in classes on women writers to show how women of her time were thinking in terms that women of our time have difficulty thinking in, you know, that we've so separated the spirit or mind and the body. And then a more recent version of that can be found in a poem like Anne Sexton's In Celebration of My Uterus. I would never have thought of writing a poem like this, to tell you the truth, but she inspired me to write a poem called In Praise of My Belly, but I won't be reading that to you right now. I'm just going to quote one stanza from this wonderful poem. Sweet weight, in celebration of the woman I am, and of the soul of the woman I am, and of the central creature and its delight, I sing for you. I dare to live. Hello, spirit. Hello, cup. Fasten cover, cover that does not contain. Hello to the soil of the fields. Welcome, roots. I will have to speak for myself now when I say that some of the cultural or societal attitudes toward women and their bodies has not contributed to healing for me in my life, has definitely not contributed to that. And I see in some newer attitudes expressed in this poetry a much more fitting way, especially when you think that we've been urged, ever since Paul wrote, to regard our bodies as a holy temple, right? Mm-hmm. Where did we go wrong? Where did we get off that track? So that's those are just brief examples of poems of celebration and integration. I think we too have begun to recover some of our ability to see the sacred in everyday experiences, to see it in nature. Without being pantheists, you know, we know that everything in nature is made by God and is praising God in its own being. Then there are also in poetry many cries of loss and separation. And I'm going to distribute now a couple of poems that could fall into this category. You may have to share here, so I ask you to do that. I think there will be one copy for every two people. Careful about the photocopy. have one more copy. You want? This poem, Lost, by David Wagoner, is based upon a metaphor that you will quickly recognize, a comparison. And as we read the poem, I want you to think about what that metaphor might mean to you, particularly, but also to anyone else that you might know. Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breeze. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. What is this poem saying to you? It's a little bit like a puzzle, and there are many ways to put together the pieces, so don't be afraid of letting us know what your way of putting those together is.
I guess my sense is that the lostness has to do with the relationship between us and nature, mm-hmm. that we're lost to the meaning of nature. And if we just open ourselves to its reality, there would be no lostness. So I find that sense of, you know, separation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. As if the trees have the ability to know.
All right. It's giving human qualities to the trees. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Lost is merely a perception.
Mm. Lost is a perception. I'm tempted to say, right on.
This moves outside the poem to make a connection. We talked about denial earlier. Mm-hmm. The first step toward healing is getting to know where we are. Mm. If I have cancer, I need to get acquainted with my body as it is now, rather than simply focusing on where I came from.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right.
One of the other images I got was of an oasis, even though it's not a desert, mm-hmm. but it's a space being created because you are there.
Mm-hmm.
The space, it's kind of like if a tree falls and no one is there to hear it, does it make a noise? But this last part about the forest knows where you are, you really have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
In this space,
mm-hmm.
and be alert,
mm-hmm.
and quiet.
Mm-hmm. Alert.
Alert,
yes.
And quiet.
Okay. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Well, the sense I get of it is that you're really not lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like she said, it's perception, it's our perspective. We may think we're lost, but wherever we are is here. I mean, if you're here, you know you're here. Maybe that's all we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't thought about this totally, but you know, I see this as a metaphor for, I mean, he talked about nature. You could take it another level and say, you know, God or whatever you wanted to, but God knows where you are. You're not lost to him. Mm-hmm. You know, think of the shepherd finding the lost sheep.
Mm-hmm.
He searches them out, and it's not necessarily the sheep's job to find the shepherd if he's lost. You know, there's something else working there greater than you. And so you have to let it find you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we have to, it all gets back to what we said about resigning and
yes, well, but that's well said, and I think that God could certainly be the subject here. You know, I'm not saying that God is, but
no,
could
it's
be.
One thing,
yeah,
one.
Right. When I first read this poem, I stopped after Stand Still. It arrested me. Right in the middle of my life, which is still pretty frenetic, despite the fact that I'm retired. Anyone else here retired and wondered what you used to do? Or how you used to do a real job, so to speak? Stand Still. Okay, now if we approach the poem that way, I think we have an invitation here to find, I'm still drawn to what Melissa said about the center point in our lives. Do we really know what that center point is? Its source, its wellspring, how it feeds us, how we can count on it? Or are we busy, are we running around? And we live in Southern California, and there are lots of stereotypes about Los Angeles that are true. You get on the freeways and you never get off. I mean, you just... You wanted to say something? I'm sorry.
Well, for me, that center point is the place where it's just love.
Mm-hmm.
It's just love.
Mm-hmm.
And any veerance out of that would be fear. And then everything that comes with fear, and that creates a whole gamut. And I think that's where unhealth
mm-hmm.
comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... a place of imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a couple more responses and then, yes.
I was just going to go with another metaphor. Sometimes I like to picture it as like a potter's wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a potter, but I've thrown on a wheel just a couple times. And I know that if you just get your hands in the right place and let the clay sort of come to you, you have to be very, very still
mm-hmm.
in order to center it
on
the wheel so that... that finally you can just sort of relax and you know that you're centered and you know that you're not going to be all the way.
Is that the way it feels? I've watched it. I've never
let
done
it.
Yeah.
Finally. You don't have to keep your whole body tense into it. Then of course if you try to shape it and you knock you in one little
uh-huh.
part, you know, you're off center again.
It's a wonderful comparison because it's both fluid and still, right?
Yeah,
and there's
right.
a center to it, and it's always fluid, being shaped. Well, I want to get to the last part of the session, so I had about 3 or 4 more poems, but this is the nature of things, right? And it's very important, I think, to share our own insights. If you would like a copy of those other poems, I'd be happy to give them to you. So now we're going to turn to the cries of the spirit that come from our own experiences. By the way, lest I forget to do it, if this is your last day here and you would like to pick up one of these flyers on Christian meditation, it's very self-explanatory and I would invite you to do that. Okay, so I have some paper in case you don't have any, and I have pencils, and these are primarily first lines from published poems. I'm not going to tell you right now who the poet is. The ones in green for growth, you know, that sort of thing, are what I would call poems that are cries of celebration and integration. And the ones in red come from poems that I would say are more of the previous category, loss, and separation. or the category we just looked at, I'm sorry. So choose one of those first lines. You don't absolutely have to choose one of these first lines, but it's an interesting kind of thing to do. And then write, flowing out of that first line, and see if you can arrive at some kind of whole expression of your particular cry of the spirit at this moment. So how many people need paper here? I know, just take one if you need it, okay? And the pencils? If you need them, they'll be up here. Feel free to come up and then I have more paper. This is just one side, so hold this. Feel that you need to write a poem. Maybe you want to call it an outburst, okay? Thank you. invite you now to be still with this poem, to invite it into your spirit, to let it feed your center, to allow it to take you into that place of growth and discovery, which may be healing for you. And to take that first step in the direction of true celebration of who you are, true integration of all that has been, with all that is and is to come. Since our time is up, I'll invite you to stay here if you want to continue to write or to leave. And I'll just play some music that comes from Margaret Rizza, who is a British vocalist, as you leave. Okay? Thank you very much for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you.